I'm Todd, I'm an addict. So I've told my story a couple times. I'm going to do it like I normally do and try to leave out some of the gory stuff. So I'll start at the beginning. I grew up in Eastern Kentucky, a.k.a. God's country. Very important to me, the Kentucky Wildcats. That's right. Get it out. Yeah. Let me know when UT gets a basketball team. Sorry about that. Okay. Making friends. Yeah, you're right. Okay. So I grew up in Eastern Kentucky, in a broken home. My dad abandoned us at the classic story. He went to go get a loaf of bread and never came back. My mom was addicted to drugs all my life. She still is addicted to drugs. My dad died about 4 years ago from alcoholism. So it's the growing up story. I'm sure a lot of you can identify with it. You know, a lot of times you don't get to participate in activities because your parents can't afford the stuff. A lot of times you don't get to dress nice. All those things, and that's my story as well. The difference for me was that I used my family's the pattern of addiction within my family to try to motivate myself to get out of that early on. So my mom is an addict. My dad's an addict. My older brother's an addict. My little brother's an addict. It's pretty much obvious that it's in my family, but I was bound and determined to not be one of those statistics. So what I did was I just basically jumped into the school life. I was a nerd. I grew up. I was valedictorian in my high school class, went to college on academic scholarship, all that stuff. I basically became addicted to school, and there's a couple reasons I did that. It was the similar reasons to drugs. I got a very good feeling from going to school. I was lucky enough to have wonderful teachers that motivated me, that gave me the encouragement that a lot of schools don't do these days, where kids are allowed. They tell you can do anything, you're smart, you're intelligent, they motivate you, and they push you to go in that right direction. So because of that, I became addicted to school. And after I graduated high school, I went to college and I started to dabble with alcohol. I was still bound and determined to not repeat what my brothers. At this point, I was 18, 19 years old. My older brother was serving a long-term prison sentence. My younger brother was off on his 15 or 16 years old, heavily addicted. I was in college, and I would do, you know, like on a bender or something, you know, like get drunk, not remember the next morning, but then go to school. And still, I was able to do that for 3 years until my senior year of college. And what happened for my senior year of college is, you know, I got my heart broken. It was the first real relationship. The girl I was with, we broke up and then she started dating her platonic friend. And we all know that's bullshit. And I took it to heart, and I wanted to like forget how, like take that all that pain away. And I found drugs at that point, marijuana primarily, and began to use heavily. My whole senior year, luckily enough, I had a good enough GPA to graduate. My whole senior year of college was really, really, really fun, but it was the beginning of the end for me. So I graduated from college and started working in Lexington, Kentucky, managing a gas station. It was 2003, the end of 2003, was when I moved to Texas. And the reason I moved to Texas was twofold. One, my older brother got out of prison for the fifth or sixth time. And I won $5,000 on a scratch-off lotto ticket. And I was spending that on the appropriate things. Coke and hookers. So, I looked at Texas as an opportunity to get with my family and, to try to, get, cause I've, both of my brothers and I, we've been pretty distant. My family's been pretty distant my entire life. Or I've been distant from them, I should say, my entire life. And I got here and found out that my family had discovered a drug trafficking enterprise, which allowed them to take drugs from Texas to Kentucky, buy them very cheap here and sell them very expensively there and come back and make a lot of money. And being the entrepreneurial spirit that I am, I got involved. Now, keep in mind, I wasn't using very heavily at the time, but I did. It happened very soon after that because, well, I needed drugs to get there and back. It's a 30-hour trip there and back. I was living in Waco, Texas. The other part about, yeah, armpit of America, I know. The other part about that is I began a teaching career. I began teaching and coaching in the same year that I began heavily using drugs. And I was able to do that for a few years. I don't know why, but they don't piss test teachers in Texas, so I did it okay. And I thought I was maintaining my addiction, and to a point where let's just say this. I had a car and I had a place to live, so I thought I was doing good. Keep in mind, I was 2 or 3 months behind on my car payment and I was living in an RV, but I thought I was doing good. So what happened was I met this girl, she decided to tell me she was pregnant, and she wasn't. So that would keep me in the relationship, and it did. It worked. I was also holding on to the idea that that child would be the thing that got me clean. Like, as soon as I have this child, I'm going to man up and I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to take care of my responsibilities. And about a year and a half later, after we had gotten married, she finally explained to me that she had never been pregnant. She had told me the stories about having miscarriages and all these different things. And I was in denial. I wasn't even paying attention. I didn't even care, but I believed her. So at that point, that was February 10th, 2011. I remember that date very specifically because it's the day before I got clean. And the circumstances that led me to get clean were, I was expecting a large sum of money from the income tax return to pay my drug dealer back. And I found out that all of my income tax return was going to pay off, child support debt that she had told me. She didn't have to tell me about kids she didn't have. So, I was not going to be able to pay this guy back. She told me about the miscarriage. And I had no idea what to do. This was the first time when I actually felt like I had no idea what to do. And I was open to someone else's ideas. So I called my aunt, who hung up the phone on me because she's in the drug trade and I owed her some money as well. So she was pissed that I wasn't going to pay her back. And then I called my mom, who, you know, she's heavily addicted to drugs, but she saw fit to give me a good idea, and the idea was to call my brother. The brother that got out of prison for the fifth time had been clean ever since 2004. He found recovery through H&I in prison and was proceeding to go to UT Law and graduate. At the time, he's my older brother, so I hate him. It's just a weird, if you have an older brother, you probably understand. Or maybe you don't. It's weird. But, so I called him to get his advice. And, he dropped everything and came and got me. He called countless places in Austin for recovery to try to get me in so I could detox and then go to rehab. And none of the places were available. And that's when I met Martinez. It was February 2nd, 2011. He found the right step in Houston, Texas, and got me in there the same day, and everything was going fine. I had enough money to, you know, cigarettes and all that stuff I needed. And when he was about to leave, he was going from leaving Houston, come back to Austin, and it was an embrace. I hugged him, and never cried as hard as I cried at that point. Never in my entire life. I had no idea what was going to happen, but I was so grateful for what he'd done that, I was able to get past the machismo aspect that I still hold very bravely and dearly to my heart to this day. So, fast forward a couple weeks, and the right step kicks me out. I was belligerent, to say the least. I just didn't listen to the rules. I didn't care what they said. I was paying them X amount of dollars per day, or my insurance was, so I thought I could tell them what to do and tell them what I wasn't going to do. And well, that lasted a couple weeks, and 2 weeks or so into it, they kicked me out, and I had no idea what to do. My brother was pissed because he was going to have to come get me. Luckily enough, we had a friend in Houston let me spend the night there, and I was able to ride the Greyhound bus back to Austin the next day. And I stayed clean. And now that I'm here, I remember that I was actually in an Austin Recovery alumni meeting. One of the first meetings I ever came to was when it was over there off of Cameron and Cross Park. I remember because the setup was exactly the same thing, and I remember somebody talking about marbles, and I remember that was part of it. So I've actually – this is one of the first places I've ever been to in Austin as far as a meeting is concerned. But I've been clean since then. I was able to find a pretty good job and work my way up with a pretty good company that's treated me pretty well. 2011, I worked, and in 2012, I went back to teaching, or I attempted to go back to teaching. In my history of what I thought was my career, I had left two schools in the middle of the year. So if you know anything about that, that's like two huge, huge black marks on you. So it's very difficult to get a job. So I took a job out in West Texas at a six-man football school as the head football coach and Spanish teacher. Now, six-man football is an amazing sport, and I love it. West Texas, I hate it. It's the worst. And by the worst, I mean I didn't try. When I went there, when I moved from my recovery community here in Austin and moved there, there was a recovery community that I didn't feel like I wanted to be a part of. I thought I was better then. So I did not try. I barely went to any meetings. I didn't do any step work. And it showed, and I learned my lesson the hard way. I had to tuck my tail back from West Texas and come back to the company that I left. Thankfully, they took me back. I don't know how, and I don't know why I got that experience, but I do know that there is a higher power in my life. I know that because of the amount of things that I've done that could have gotten me arrested or killed, that, you know, I've been very blessed. And that's including since I've gotten clean. Like, there have been a couple times when I should have been in trouble and somehow I got out of it. Now, what the higher power's name is and what color hair and shit, I don't know. I don't even going to pretend to act like I know anything about that. That's for you to decide. But I do know for me that there is something outside of me that helps me. And that's a huge, huge thing for me to say. A lot of times when I walk into the room, I have the humility problem, the ego complex. I either think I'm the best, the ultimate best at everything in the whole building, or I think I'm scum of the earth. I can't get right sized. And what I hear is if you're not humble, you'll be humiliated. And that's worked for me. The humiliation gets me where I need to be. The problem is in the recovery side of that is, I would rather kind of bypass that to get to like being humble, and it's just not happening yet. Thankfully though, I get to do the steps, and thankfully I have a sponsor. For me, I did the steps and then I'm doing them again. The reason I'm doing them again is because, I'm not just healed, you know, I do stupid shit still. And I want to address those things as I move forward in my recovery. So when I came back to Austin 2012, it was very, very soon after that, February of 2013, I met a young lady. I had made a sworn, I was, what's that word? You're not going to bang anybody. Celibacy. Yeah. I was celibate. So, I made that my goal to be celibate, and then I met her. That's my higher power, right? So, clearly it's my higher power. Within 3 months, we were pregnant. We had coffee and we got pregnant. And, yeah. Got a mighty fine kick to it. So, at that point, all those things that I thought about in 2011 when I was going to get clean with the lady I was married to, I thought this is perfect timing for me. All on the outside, my life was great. On the inside, I wasn't dealing with it effectively. Emotionally speaking, I was not dealing with this life change. Like having a child, like I pretended on the outside, like I'm cool cat, everything's great, but on the inside, it was not working that well. So I started to act out in other ways. My two main culprits were sex and food. I cheated a lot and I ate food the same way I would if I was using. I would go through a drive-through and eat really quickly before I got home, throw the bag out. I traveled for work a lot, so I would do the sexual stuff when I was traveling, and it was a fiasco. Like my life was again unmanageable. But thankfully, April 25th, 2014, Abigail was born. She's the best thing that ever happened to me. Having her has given me a whole new meaning for everything. Like when I was, my brother had a kid that's like 3 years older than Abigail, and he told me, when she's born, you're going to love her so much. You're never going to realize how much love you could have. Whenever she was born, I didn't have that. I was still in shock. She was a thing that needed to be fed. When it cried, it was three things. It was either dirty, hungry, or sleepy, and I addressed that issue and moved forward. And she was about 6 months old when her mother and I split up. Her mother found out about what I was doing, and you know, we did the whole like shared custody type thing. And at that point, that's when Abigail became real to me. When I had to care for her for, you know, 12 to 24 hours in a row. And I realized, like, at some point, I'm not going to be there for her. Like, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I'm sitting here, it's like, every night I sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Stars to her. And I'm singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Stars through my tears to a six-month-old. And she doesn't give a shit. She's, you know, it's 8 p.m., so she's like, half an hour past her bedtime, she's fine. And it was an amazing point for me though, because at that point, what my brother said was true. Like, if you have kids, then you understand. If you don't have kids, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you don't have that benefit. But it's a feeling and an emotion that, I've never had before. And I haven't had since then. Like, but anyway, I digress. Going forward, her mother and I split up, and I was like, yeah, I'm over her. She's not, you know, she's not what I want. She's got X, Y, and Z problems, yada, yada, yada. We're going to split. Here's the kicker. We're both in recovery. We both go to the same meetings. So, it did suck. Thankfully for me, I found a men's group. In South Austin, I went to a men's group every Thursday night. I felt kind of safe there. And, God knows they were talking shit after I left, but I still, like that meeting is very important to me and I love going to that meeting. But in the meantime, I decided to start, you know, testing the waters and dating. And I tried, all the little new apps all the kids have, you know, Tinder and Grindr and all that stuff. And I said, what the hell? Give it a shot, you know? Swipe right every time. You can 100% accuracy. So That last part was a joke. But I dated a few people, and I thought, you know, I'm over this chick. You know, I'm going to find the love of my life. We're going to move forward and split custody, all that fun stuff. And about 5 months after that, so this is March of 2015. We're in a meeting together. I started to become comfortable enough to be in a meeting. And at the end of the meeting, everybody's giving each other hugs, and somebody goes to give her a hug, and I feel something in my heart, like a little bit of jealousy. And thankfully, I've been able to talk to a therapist a lot as well as part of my recovery, and talk to my therapist about this. And they're like, you're not over her. I wasn't. So I arranged a meeting with her where I kind of put all my stuff on the table, and I was like, listen, I'm sorry. I apologize for what I did. There's no going back. If you want to move forward, if you want to give me another shot, this is what I'm going to do. We'll go to couples counseling. I'll go to counseling. You'll go to counseling. The baby will go to counseling. Everybody's going to get counseling. Just whatever, you know. She agreed to give me another shot. And that was, I'm so blessed because she is absolutely perfect for me. As crazy and outlandish as I am, she's as cool as the other side of the pillow. It's amazing how well we work with each other. And she doesn't take my shit anymore. So that's what I need. About a month ago, we got married. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing, and I'm grateful for that. If I would have pictured myself when I got kicked out of I got kicked out of the Right Step, and I sat in the a coffee shop nearby with my luggage and I wrote down a list of like 10 things I want to try to do once I got clean, and everything that I wrote on that list, my life is like thousands of times better than everything I could have imagined at that point. Like I imagined some crazy shit, but since I've gotten clean, I've been able to travel the world for free. I've been able to help people give back to people be a part of something amazing in this recovery community of Austin. So I don't know how this happens. All I know is that if I do a step, my life gets better. I don't know how it works. I wish I could like bottle that shit. I'm a salesman. If I could bottle that and sell it, I'd be that guy on TV that says you're not an addict and give you the formula and you know, millionaire real quick. But it's just something that I don't know how it happens. And I'm sure somebody here can pontificate about the magnificence of it, but I don't, that's not for me to know. What I know is that if I do a step, my life gets better. Maybe the circumstances don't improve, but my perspective always improves. It doesn't matter what step. So the way I work steps is we do steps out of a workbook. And once I do a step, it's like I'm doing homework. Like I'm trying to turn it in for a grade to the teacher. And I'm answering the questions, yada, yada, yada. And then we go over it with my sponsor. And then the step works me. Like the things that I learned while doing that step come into my life. And I don't know if it's because my feelers are up and I'm thinking about it or whatever the case may be, whatever happens in that process, I learn a great deal. If for example, right now I'm on step three and I am, one of the things I'm trying to bring God into my life, allow my higher power to work in my life is through traffic. I am my car is kind of fast, so I want it to go that way. And when somebody's in the fast lane going 50, there's things that occur. There's a system, there's a disciplinary system. You know, first I give them the old light flashing. Then I wait for an opportune time to pass them and scare them to death. And then I pass them and realize it's a little old lady who probably doesn't even know where she's at. And I feel like a total douchebag. And then I realize everybody around me just saw me do that douchebag move to that little old lady. And then it's just totally nonsense. So I've got to invite my higher power to move that old chick out of the way. Or give me some acceptance and say, I'm going to get there pretty much the same time, more or less. I mean, there are arguments of, in physics and how fast things can get there and all that stuff. But, you know, still I kind of emotionally believe I'll get there faster. So like for me, this is just a very minute situation. Like traffic is, my drive to work is 5 or 10 minutes at most. I'm blessed for that. But, that's just one area, like, for example, that step work has worked for me. I wish I could tell you that, you know, I'm a shining beacon of recovery and I'm not. I still make huge, I always will make big mistakes. And the best part about being in recovery is that I know there are second chances for everything. So I, you know, when I cheated on my girlfriend at the time, and at some point thought that there were times after we split up that I thought, I'll go to a strip club. I'll find somebody that's holding. I'll get the hookup and then it'll be done. And I won't have to worry about any of these people that I know. And then I thought about the people that care about me that are in recovery that would be, hurt if I did that. And that like kept me clean, knowing that there are people in recovery, knowing that I have friends that love me. So I don't have much more to say. I'm going to talk about my mom a little bit because it's a really, really tough topic, and then I'm going to get off this thing. My mom is currently in the hospital for the third or fourth time in the last 2 years. And by in the hospital, I don't mean she's there overnight. She's been there over a month. This is not the first time. And it's all of her stuff going on inside of her body is because of drug addiction. And I've been blessed enough to like, I have a place for her to stay. And I've begged her to come to Austin. And, I know how my brothers feel now because when I was using in Waco, they were in Austin. They were saying, come to Austin, check it out. I was like, fuck those hippies and hipsters. And now I am one. But, so the same thing goes for her. Her family, her close-knit family that's there that help her maintain her active addiction are there. But October of last year, she got released from the hospital, and she was going to come live with us. And we had a spare bedroom. I'm not good with blood and shit, but my wife is. So she was handling all that stuff. And we had her address changed. We were getting all of her bank stuff. Everything was, we were just handling everything. And, she stayed with us for 1 week. We took a short vacation to Galveston that weekend. And, she talked to one of her sisters to come pick her up and take her back to Waco. And I found this out, in Galveston on the phone and, you know, at that point, I tried to like write her off. Like, I'm powerless over this. I can't do anything more for her. I don't, and I had one of those good, deep cries that just like, she's like 50 something years old. My daughter has a good shot to like get to know her. My brothers and I have broken the cycle of addiction in our family. My little brother's doing well. My older brother's graduated law school. We're the cycle has been broken in our family. And we just want to, like, I just want to help her. And she's not interested. She's not ready. And, For us in the room here, for people that have been involved with this kind of stuff, it gives me a perspective of all the other people that were waiting on me that wanted to do the things for me to get me to see straight. High school valedictorian, college scholarship, guys addicted to drugs for 10 years. What the fuck's wrong with this guy? And now I'm in the same situation. Like, I've got this, I'm completely powerless over this woman. I've given her everything that I can do to make her want to live with us, and she just doesn't want to live with us. And so now I'm practicing step three with it, and I'm asking a higher power to find a way to give me some acceptance for this, because I know the other option is probably not going to happen. So like, I go and see her as much as possible. My little brother's kind of written her off, so she doesn't get to see his son, but I want her to know my daughter, so I take my daughter up there as much as possible and force my daughter to hug her because she doesn't know who the hell she is. And like, it's such a tough situation. But it brings me to another step, another part of step three that I'm working on is death. I'm powerless over death. And I have a huge, huge fear of it. When my father died, it's a weird story. I was going to end it, but I'm sorry, I'm going to finish it. So when my father died, those of you who don't want to smoke, just hold it. When my father died, my brother was graduating college down here, and my dad flew down from Michigan and died here in Texas when his cirrhosis of the liver flew up, like his whole liver like stopped. And I saw him one time while he was in the hospital for like 2 weeks, dying. Everyone knew he was dying, but just wasn't going to go because of this paralyzing fear that I have about death. So since that time, I'm realizing that everyone dies, and I need to make this experience, like the time that I have with them that are going to die and with me that's going to die, I need to make the most of it. So I have family that I met for the first time he lived in Michigan. I have family that I met for the first time there. That I go and see as often as possible. I have family in Kentucky that I go and see as often as possible. And the reason it isn't, it's just simply because I want to get to know them and experience them before it's too late. So the same thing is for my daughter. Like, I want my daughter to experience my mom as much as possible. So, which leads me to where I'm at right now. I'm very grateful that Martinez and Chris, whoever Chris is, invited me to come. You're Chris. Oh, thanks, Chris. Yeah, thanks. Guess I won't be back. Thanks. I'm very grateful for you guys inviting me out here. I just got back from China on Wednesday, and my head's been swimming ever since then, that jet lag and stuff. But I, when he said he had an opening for this week, and I said, well, fuck it, let's just do it. I'm really grateful that it's worked out well, and I'm glad I came. Thank you. That's all.